So we want to go through these five, you guys get that fancy graphic? I did not do that, but that was kind of a cool graphic. John, was that you that did that? John, had a kid? All right, so what you guys are going to notice here are some commonalities. We call them the five S, the five profit pillars of note investing, right? And so finding, is that very similar to real estate deals and any other business that needs business? You got to generate leads, right? You got to find notes that are for sale. You either got to find them or create your own. You're out of business without finding product inventory, right? So funding, does it take money to be successful in real estate and note investing?
Apparently not.
Nod your head, yes. It does. Does it have to be all your money?
No.
No, it doesn't. So a lot of the stuff that we're going to show you, we have zero of our own money invested in. All right, so we've structured. I have my 401k, my sole 401k that's set up with Equity Trust. You know, we've invested in notes with that, right? But other than that, we brought on capital partners, right? So you guys can show how we do that. So the fix, right? So I'm going to show you some models here in a minute. But fix, what do you think that, just like you fix houses that are run down, there are broken notes that have problems.
Yes, sir.
Right? So you're fixing them, right? They're non-performing, they're slow pay, they're reperforming, they've stopped paying again, and you got to come in and restructure that, you got to fix them, right? So that's a big part of if you're operating out of that, we'll talk about that in a minute. Flow, right? What do you think that is? Are you buying them or selling them? You're keeping them, right? So do you sell them after you, if you go through all the work, and you got a portfolio, you got a passive income portfolio, so you're gonna flow them. You fix them, you're gonna flow them right away, right? You're gonna keep them, cash flow. Flip is just what it is. We're gonna sell it. Sometimes if we want to go full time, right in this, you might not be able to keep every single note that you buy or create, right? You might not be able to do that because we need to pay the bills, right? So there is options that we're gonna go through on some of these models. Right, so it's very similar to real estate investing. Right? Do you guys see the commonalities there? Right? So let's go through that. I want to show you what I feel are the six most common note investing profit models. Okay? And the big part of this, as I go through it, has a lot to do with what your personal plan is. Right? So would a doctor's plan be different than maybe someone who's a full-time real estate investor? It'd be very different, right? Because they're not going to be able to have all of the free time that maybe someone who's out in the marketplace, real estate agents, I feel like they got an advantage. Real estate investors, they just know different markets like the back of their hand, right? If they're really good at what they do. So the question is, which one is right for you? And it might be which two are right for you, because you might be working in a hybrid of a couple of different models, right? So this is really key. So let me go through them. So the first one, right? Oh, that slides out. Let me just rephrase that. So as I go through this, because this is actually before we jump into the models, I see some people want to take a picture of that slide, you can do that. Investing, obviously, coach has taught you guys well. It's a team sport, right? And what I love about note investing, maybe even more so than real estate investing, but equally so, is that if I decide that I just want to be very passive and let other people do the active parts of note investing, I can just be a quarterback managing a team that does all the work. If I don't want to get on the phone and ever talk to a borrower, I don't have to. It will cost me part of my return to have someone do that, but I may partner with a loan servicer. And how many of you think other loan servicers might be better than others, right? Just like any people on that list, you're gonna be looking for your A team. And we hope that just by hanging around us and, if there's a masterminding situation, right, where we're vetting some of these vendors together, right, service providers that help us, I think that'd be helpful to not have to go through people and learn the hard way which guys do what they say they're gonna do and which guys don't, right? So that's kind of a big deal. So that's a list there. And we'll come back to that a little bit later, right? But those are key deals. So let's go to model number one. Alright, so I call this the find and fund model, right? And let's just put these down. So really, for a lot of people when they start off, one of the first things you've got to learn, some people, you know where you're at. Some people right now, as you sit here, have all the capital you need to do deals, right? And whether you have all the capital you need or not, what's going to happen is to be able to source it. You don't have, if you have a big old pot of cash, if you don't know how to source a good solid deal, you're out of business. You can't be in business. If you don't have a big old pot of cash, right, but you know how to source a deal and bring the deal to the table, are you in the game?
Yes.
You're in the game at some level, right? So finding and funding, right, you might not do both of those. You might just be finding and never take title to any of these, and you might just broker. So first and foremost, I encourage everybody, right, in our company, before I went off and started, just a lot of my focus is on capital, bringing on capital partners. I spend 70% of my time working with capital partners, right, on multiple levels, whether it's a mom and pop with a small amount in a self-directed retirement account, to hedge funds that would co-invest with us and just want to have their money in and out. It just depends, right? So I do that. But before I did that, right, I needed to know how to find deals. I didn't know how to evaluate deals, right? Can I manage somebody? If I end up ultimately outsourcing that, can I manage them if I really don't understand how to do it? You really don't. So that's why I say get your black belt in sourcing, and we want to help you do that. A common area here would be a note broker, right? So you're going to get your black belt in sourcing. You know how to find deals, and it might not necessarily be your capital, but at some point to get paid, there has to be a funding that takes place, right? Whether it's your money or someone else's. So note brokers, they spend a lot of time in this model. It's the find and fund model, right? So I heard some people say, hey, I'd like to know how to market properties. Once I've found one, right, that I've locked up, how do I do that? How do I go about doing that? The reason I like this one, right, a lot of people when they get started in the note business, right, it literally, that you can get educated on how to broker notes, right? So I love paying broker fees. So we spend time educating people on how to broker stuff to us, right? We're not the only people that do that. There's other entities that do that, and we'll teach you how to broker stuff to them, and or they have other funding sources. They're a master broker, right? So they'll come to you, you bring the deal, and they work it out where you guys are gonna split the broker fee. Does that make sense? So that's out there. So when you talk about getting going without any of your money or credit, that was in the marketing to come to this event, this is what you can do. You spend time in this model. Does that make sense? Questions on that? Got it? So, right, what you're gonna do here is you want to identify a niche, right? What does that mean? And why is that important? Identifying a niche. Can you be jack of all trades? What usually comes behind that phrase?
Master of none.
Master of none, right? So if you're actually able to go carve out a niche, right? If we have one guy who I actually brokered my first little mini pool of re-performing notes to me, which I'll go through that one of them this afternoon. But we paid him as part of the three note transaction an $18,000 broker fee, right? To do that transaction, it's on a $350,000 purchase. Was he happy?
Yeah.
And you'll see why I was happy. You know, we bought about $220,000 of debt equity, right? So there was that additional, we bought it at a discount, about 62 cents on the dollar for that, right? So we were very happy about that. But this particular guy had carved out with a specific hedge fund that was known for not wanting to work with inexperienced brokers, right? That were kind of new in the business, they had no patience for them. They just flushed those guys out quick, chewed him up, spit him out, said, you're new, go come back when you're more seasoned. And he learned to work with his hedge fund, and he learned to source re-performing notes for people. He actually was buying for his own account, and he would network, and I actually met him at an event, and he had a couple of deals that he didn't have funding for, and we'd cash out of a fix and flip in San Diego, and it just worked. So I tell you guys, network within this room, and you're gonna have people either have cash, or they have notes, and that's what I'm saying. It could be sitting right in this room where you guys, I predict that there's gonna be a lot of business that flows through this room, all right, just with that. So is that key? So some other niches, we went through all those different types of notes, Some people work exclusively with performing notes, right? They want to work with good paper. They don't spend any time trying to fix bad paper, right? Does that make sense? And so you can literally carve out your niches and be really good at certain things. One thing that Coach mentioned at the top of the hour, when stuff comes at him, is he able to adapt and pivot and know stuff? So just like you want to know, is this a lease option? Is this a subject two? Is this something, you know what I mean? All the different ways to take down a real estate transaction. The more you know about, you know, so have a general knowledge, but typically you're going to have a few niches. And once you get a niche up and running and it's on autopilot, you know, I always say, you know, be working maybe two niches max at a time. When I see people trying to work five different niches and they're kind of, you know, below average at all of them, you know, that's when you can get burned, right? So really find one that you resonate with, right? And it might be where your capital source that you network into, sometimes you back into the niche. Does that make sense? Like they want a certain criteria and you're like, oh, go find them that. So you're telling me if I bring this to you, you're going to close and I'm going to make X. Good. So now you have a niche. So you have a niche based on the capital source, whereas if you have capital already and you kind of learn about the different niches, that's what you might do, right? So really the big deal here, what we see a lot of in this particular area is the leveraging other people's money, right? This is one where you would start off in, you still want to get that black belt started. So that's model number one, find and fund. So let's go to the next one. So this is find, fund, and flow, right? So this is the classic easy button example, right? Where you literally want to buy paper that's already performing, so you know how to source it, you know how to find it, right? You have some capital, right? And you're going to do for your own account, right? And you could actually broker out some of these notes and work in this niche too, but this is what your capital partner wants. Some that's performing already, and they just want you to find it for them. But if it's for you personally, literally, you buy it, you board it with a servicer or leave it at the loan servicer that it's at, and you collect checks. That's what you do. Right, it's about as easy as you can get, very passive in nature. And you know, if someone says, hey, would I rather in my retirement account, or I have a bucket of cash that's in my taxable, it's my personal name, it's taxable, I'm okay because that's taxed at what? What is interest income taxed at? Who knows? Is it get capital gain treatment, preferential treatment like long-term capital gains? What is interest income?
Ordinary.
Is it short-term? It's taxed similar, right? But it's ordinary. It's just ordinary income. Interest income is taxed. It gets added in, right? So that's key. So, but this is the easy button. Performing or reperforming notes, right? There's payments coming in, right? That's key. This is the passive investor's dream, right? Right, where you really want to be hands-off and you just want to deploy the capital that you've built up over a lifetime. Right, a lot of people, and you'll find a lot of people who've got maybe one or two as you network into people, they have 401k accounts from previous employers, right? And it's just sitting out there in the stock market and they have no clue. I run into people all the time that end up coming to our workshops and they're either in retirement or very close to retirement. And I offer let's do a review of your portfolio. And they have no idea that they're 100% in equities with their Morgan Stanley advisor. They're, you know, do you guys understand what I'm saying? Like they're that close to retirement. And what's the problem with being 100% in equities in stocks, in the stock market, in your retirement plan?
Volatility.
Volatility, right? You know, as long as the stock market's doing well, you're doing well, right? But what happens if the stock market goes down? How much control do they have of that? They don't, right? So they need to kind of move into a more income-oriented approach, right? They might move into some bonds if they're going to stay stock and bond market, right? But they need to reallocate where they're at and either their financial advisor. I mean, you guys need to understand, people are going to look to you if you decide you really want to build this business, whether you're just a straight-up real estate investor or a note investor. They're looking to you as a trusted advisor. And you will become that trusted advisor because you're sitting in a room like this. So I challenge you guys to take that seriously if you really want to be good at this business, right? Is you need to understand where they're at, why they're where they're at, and most of the time it's like, I don't know, they had four choices in my 401k at work, and I just slapped them in there, right? When they leave an employer, do they have to roll their new 401k into that limited four option plan?
No.
No, they can roll it into a self-directed, you know, we have full sessions on this, on the different options, what to do. That's a big source of capital for us, right? It's a big source of capital doing these self-directed IRA workshops. It's a writer downer. For those of you who aren't taking notes, that's a writer downer. Simple little IRA workshops, or can you do a mini workshop one-on-one at lunch with a slide deck on your iPad and teach people about self-directed investing that they are clueless about? I'm telling you, right in your cell phone, in your favorites, or your list of contacts is all, I'm convinced I could sit up with almost anybody and the money they need to do their deals is right in their cell phone. And some people say, I don't have very, very well-to-do friends, you know? Well, you can always upgrade your network, right? Yeah. But the point is, within your cell phone, I'm convinced that they've got numbers that if they educate them, what happens? What's the key question you should ask? I don't directly solicit someone if I'm going through at lunch. I say, do you know anyone that might be interested in something like this? Could you introduce them to me? So is the number still in the cell phone? Because who do they know? You've all heard the rule of 250? What's the rule of 250? So, exactly. So what's 250 by 250? So if you guys have limited thinking, this is really, if you guys don't have it written down, the rule of 250, write this down. Seriously. Because if you're thinking that there's a limited amount of capital out there, I want to challenge you in the next 30 seconds. So in your cell phone, most people have 250 in their contacts, right? Most people have 250. Right, so if I meet you, how many do you have in yours? How many, what's the average number that you have in your phone?
250.
250, so what's 250 by 250?
62,500.
For my mathematicians here, what's 250? What is it? 62,500 people. So that's the minimum size of your network. Do you guys understand that? That's the minimum size. One, that's one degree of separation. We're not going six, we're going one, right? So I'm convinced, I'll work with any of you, if you think capital is your limitation, it's not your limitation, all right? So we just show you this. The velocity model, on some of these, some investors, I know people, we have actually started doing this, where they'll actually buy performing notes at a discount, or re-performing notes at a discount, and they will actually sell off, this is an advanced strategy, that we'll talk about in July, right? If you're interested in this, but it's something that just blew my mind because I'd never heard it before. So you buy a stream of payments, right? So I buy a note and I've got a certain amount of capital that I put into that. I can get all or a portion of my capital back out by selling off a partial, right? So people will come and invest in a fraction of that note. So they might buy. So how many payments typically in a 30-year fixed?
360.
360. So Travis sells 120 payments. How many years did I sell?
10.
Do you think people actually buy that?
Yes.
Why would they buy that?
Cash flow.
Right? And so what I do is I keep the tail end of that. I keep the tail end of that. So from payment 121 on, right? So it's an advanced strategy, right? I'll actually keep that in my Roth IRA, right? So I get all my money back out. There's a, you know, and I can show you the flow. You know, if that's something you're interested, go ahead.
Just to clarify that during this period of time, if the loan is paid off, then it's not 121 and further, right?
Yeah, but what happens, where's most of the interest in a 30-year amortization?
In
the beginning. So when that note gets handed back to me, let's say I sell off 60 months. If that note gets sold back to me, how much has my principal been reduced? Remember, I try to get most of my money out. So when you sell a partial, there's just to keep it simple, we're not going to spend a bunch of time going deep on this. When you sell a partial, there's the overall amortization schedule of the contract, and there's a number of payments. Theirs pays off way faster, and when it comes back, there's some charts we can show you. But it's slick, and that's what the velocity model is, where other people want passive income, and you can decide to temporarily give yours up, right, to keep the tail, they call it, to keep the tail. And that's really slick, right? So you can do that. It helps you really build a nest egg for the future, right? Which is something really cool too. So we talk about strategic alliances with note creators, people who are, you know, creating notes on seller financing. So, you know, Coach teaches a lot about buying on seller financing, right? You can also sell on seller financing, right? And I'll do this really quick. I just want you to think for a minute throughout the day, because it'll start to spark some questions. We won't go deep, we'll come back to that. But I want you to think for a minute, if this is your house, right? That's kind of a skinny house. That looks a little crayon.
Little brown stuff.
Crayon. Is it crayon, or just for the record, crayon or crayons?
Crowns.
Crayon.
Crayon.
That's so
funny.
Yeah,
it's crayon. It's not a Canadian word. Right?
Yeah, it's not a Canadian word. Christina, what is
crayon.
It?
Crayon.
Thank you. She's so, you know, she gets the, she traveled the longest distance to come from Vancouver, Canada today. Right? So let's just say this house is worth $100,000. Right? Right? So when you sell something on terms, that's $100,000 if they give me cash, right? I don't care where the cash comes from. They could have got a loan to bring in the cash. But if I now offer terms, what can I typically get away selling that house for? I'm going to sell it. I'm going to sell it on contract.
110.
120. 110.
120.
105. I'm hearing 110. Do I hear 115?
120.
Easily. And I'm convinced that you can easily sell that.
119.
I say 119.9 because it's cylinder 120, right? But 119.9, if you offer terms on that, you can sell it. Now, most people say, well, what am I looking for in terms of a down payment? Right? So what are you looking for?
Zero.
Right? What would you guys let someone into one of your properties for? Do you let them in with zero down payment?
5 to 7.
I don't.
5
never.
7.
I say
5 to 10. Now hold on, I'm hearing 3.5. Who said 3.5?
The FHA buyer.
Okay, but hold on, are we FHA?
No.
Do we have to accept 3.5?
No.
How well has that worked out for FHA?
No.
I'm just being a little bit facetious. I respect all government agencies today, right? You know, but the reality of it is, the more skin in the game, the better, right? So we've done deals, typically 5% is the lowest we've done, right? But we try to get 10, 15%. Do you guys, you hear about mattress money, do you think it's real?
Yeah.
How many people are out there that would love, just with this last downturn of the market, that their credit got crushed, but they got some dough? They got some dough, they could afford to put it down. Who do they need? They need entrepreneurs like us that will create a transaction they can invest in. Now, why would you want to sell to them versus lease option to them? Because lease options are a great way to go too. There's a strategy to use lease options, right? If you just stretch it out for a year and pay long-term capital gains versus short-term when you buy a house, right? That's one reason you might use lease options. But at some point, if I want to move into a note, why would I not sell or finance and use a lease option? This is just one comment. This is just a little debate here before we've got time here. Right, what's the difference? What do I have to do when I sell or finance a house if they don't follow through?
I
go propose. Does that take time?
Yeah.
Right, does that take time? It does, right? In a lease option, right? Supposedly, and I'm gonna just put this out there, I'm out in Palm Springs we had foreclosed through second position talking to an attorney. And he told me that in California, he held up a lease option for 3 years because he said it was equitable title. Mm-hmm. Right? And he held it up in court. And so this was a non-performing situation for 3.5 years. So your paperwork needs to be tight because options are an amazing thing that you can utilize, right? So there's reasons. I'm not going to go deep on that today. But for us, we end up seller financing stuff, and this is a big part of where we're going. But I want to show you the way to structure something like that, so if you're just thinking about it, right? And this will really blow your mind, and this is what I want you guys to think about. When you have assets that you might be trying to sell for cash on a flip, right? If I could show you how to net the same that you would on a flip and still stay in the deal with some passive checks, would you be interested?
Yeah.
You guys be interested in that?
Yeah.
Okay, I just want to show you that really quick. So let's just say, you gotta get out your calculators. We're not gonna get in Let's just actually just do this real quick, because we'll structure one in case we don't have a bunch of time to go deep on this. Let's just do one real quick. So get out that calculator. Mine's at the back. Who can bring my phone up here? So let's do this. So at 119.9, now if someone gives me 5% down, let's just round it to 120 to keep it clean. I would typically structure that at 119.9. I have a marketing background. Is 119.9 120,000?
Yes.
No, it's 119.9, and it's under 120. We could argue on that, but psychologically, it's under 120, right? I'm just telling you. Statistics, I geek out on that stuff, but I'm just telling you, right? So we'll say for you guys that said it's 120, we'll say it's 120, okay? So you guys are the boss here, so you have to decide. But let's say we want to get 10% down, right? Are there people in the marketplace that if you will finance them and they don't have to jump through all the hoops of a bank, you think they could go bank, borrow, and steal to get 12 grand?
Oh yeah.
All right. So let's do that. So I got 10% down, right? So now what's left? 108, right? Now, some people would go and structure and seller financing. They would structure a 90% first mortgage. Good or bad?
Bad.
So it depends. Can you do it?
Yeah.
Right? If I'm gonna hold that, who makes the rules?
You do.
You do. If I'm gonna hold that mortgage forever and just get the cash flow, I got their 10%, I'm structuring that. What if I wanna sell that note potentially someday? Is that the best structure to sell off the note?
No, you have to discount it.
Why would you discount it?
You have to. I wouldn't want to, but you don't have to.
But let's say if I wanted to go to the secondary market and sell that note, I needed cash. So I took the seller carry, I wanted the payment stream, but now times get tough, I need to sell my note. Now you might need to go out on the secondary market and sell it. What do you think some of the problems might be with that note? So what would that note be? If I go, so option one, this represents 90% what? We went through this. 90% what?
Investment.
Loan.
LTV.
Who's the spokesperson for this group? All right. LTV, right?
Yep.
Now, at the time, so that's an LTV number. At the time, if it's worth 100K,
that's good. No.
We marked it up, right? Because we offered terms. So true value, do you see how it's a little different?
Yep.
Right? So don't be fooled by that. But let's just say it's a 90% LTV investment to value. If I'm the guy coming to buy that note to give you cash for your note because you need cash. So let's say you carried back 108. So let's just do that really quick. I want to do this and I'm going to pick up with it. So I'm going to get out your 10b-2 and I'm going to give you a quick little strategy session. You're a banker. Everyone okay? Say, I am now a banker. All right. There are the fat cats on Wall Street, right? So we're going to be fat cats on Wall Street just for a little minute. So open up your 10b-2. Travis, on my home screen, I put that right there in the bottom right corner. I use it every day, right? You guys can decide where you want yours, but y'all got it up there. So this little orange button right here, pull it up. I don't have it on the screen, but hit that little orange button, open up your app, and hit clear. So that just clears above those five variables that we're going to solve for. How many of you guys got your app out? We're going to actually create a note right now. Right? So you got it? So they're all clear. So first thing we're going to do, what's our loan amount?
108.
So type in 108,000. So up on my screen, I got 1008. And I'm going to say present value. You got that? You guys said, I want to learn. I had four or five of you come up and say, I want to learn how to use this thing by the time I leave. This is as easy as it gets, right? So 108, so that's my loan amount. What's my future value? What's it gonna be worth in the future?
Zero.
It's gonna amortize, right? So type in zero. I got a zero above it, right? So now, what am I gonna do the term? I'm gonna do a 30-year fix on that. So let's just do a 30-year fix, right? So I got two left, right? So what type of interest rate would you typically offer somebody in a seller finance situation? Are they going to get 4% like they would if they could qualify?
8%.
Let's check out what 8 is, right? So type in, so now I'm going to hit 8, and then I'm going to hit IR. You got that? Everyone, so you should have four numbers above And what's the missing variable? Who fell behind?
I did.
Okay, so this is awesome. Start again, because this is really important. So we're going to hit orange button, and we're going to clear it. That clears it. So the inverse, we're going to clear. So let's start again. What's my loan amount?
108.
108,000. I type in 108,000. Then I hit what?
PV.
PV. So that's my loan amount. That's the present value of the loan, right?
Okay.
What's the future value?
Zero.
It's going to amortize over 30 years, so it's actually zero. It pays off. What's my number if it's a 30-year amortization? 360. 360. So when you hit zero, when you type zero, you have to go hit future value. So now it's set it. See how it's set it up top? It's set it. The little numbers are right up top. So now I'm going to hit 360. I type in 360, and what am I going to go hit?
N.
Why am I going to do that?
Number of payments.
That's the number of payments in the term of the loan, right? And so you're the banker, right? You determine what the interest rate is, right? So on this loan, we like 8%, so I'm going to hit 8, and then what am I going to hit?
IRR.
So I'm going to hit 8, and I'm going to hit IRR, I per year, right? So what's my missing value?
Payment.
My payment. So now just hit payment.
7.8.
You guys got that?
Why does mine say negative?
Negative. This is a really good question. When someone has a mortgage payment, this was explained to me and I like it. When you are paying a mortgage, is money flowing out of your pocket or into your pocket? That's a good way to remember it.
Okay.
So if you're actually learning how to evaluate a future, like an internal rate of return, and money's coming in on an investment, right? You would use there's different ways to structure those. Like I'm trying to figure out, it's money coming in, there's just different ways to do that. In this case, we're figuring out a mortgage for our borrower, right? So it's as though we're them, right? So you guys got that? So if I do that, $792 a month. So I want you guys to think of houses right now, right? Think of houses right now that $108,000 that you could go and be the bank, collect an 8% rate of return. Could you go a little higher?
Yeah.
Well, Dodd-Frank only lets us go so high. Right? Anyone know what that number is?
11.
So we'll have an attorney that's been doing this for 35 years coming in July, you know, and he's going to teach y'all. There's some new rules coming out August 15th for no creators and people that work. We have a Consumer Finance Protection Bureau that's been so graciously created out of thin air to govern us to make sure we're not unscrupulous, right? So you kind of got to be in compliance. It's important to know those rules so you don't end up in bars, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So anyway, so that's a payment. So when you guys think of rents on a $120,000 house, is that pretty close to what they would pay in rents? You got to add tax and insurance on top of that, but that's a payment. You guys just create a mortgage and could write up a note now. You see what I mean on that? So now I just want to say, well, what would his payment be now we're going to do scenarios really quick. What if we gave him a 9% interest rate? Let's say you knew rents were $1,100. So has he got a good deal plus taxes and insurance? I want him to be right. So let's say I really want to give him what rents would be, but he gets to own it. So I might have a little leeway. This house would rent for $1,200, right? So let me see how high I can go. So I'm going to actually go and say 9%. I got 9. I hit 9, and I'm going to go to IR. Now what changed? What should change? What value should change if I change the interest rate?
Payment.
So just hit payment. When you hit payment, what happens? All right? Don't overcomplicate this. You now know that you're creating cash flows, right? So now I know, well, it's 868 plus tax and insurance. I'm still under rent. I could get away charging this borrower because it's a supply and demand. Why would he come and buy your house if he could rent it for much cheaper? You know, there's some other status symbol, whatever it is, right? So you kind of have to price it where it makes sense, right? So now let's just write that in there for a minute. So 800 at 9%, 9% for 360 months. What's our payment? Someone tell me.
869
and change, and that's principal and interest, right? So then when you're doing this, you have to decide because you're the lender. You can get set up if you want through a servicer, where you can require them to collect monthly taxes and monthly insurance to make sure those get paid, right? Because if they, sometimes they don't get paid, bad things happen, right? So you can decide if you want to escrow or impound those. Go ahead.
If you were trying to do this on an interest-only basis, would the future value be the original balance?
On an interest-only basis, yeah. You'd actually, if you're on interest-only, I wouldn't even use those terms. I would just do a quick interest-only calculation. There's ways to get the same number using the financial calculator, but it's just a straight interest calculation divided by 12. I wouldn't confuse it. So let's get back to this for a minute, guys. So they put 10% down, it's a 90% note. When you go sell that note on a secondary market, so if you're gonna keep it, you could structure it this way. You're happy with that payment, they pay as agreed, or they sell the house at some point and pay you off, everything's good, right? If you actually want to go sell that and need to convert that to cash at some point, you may have shot yourself in the foot, right? Because is $108,000 today worth what it's going to be $108,000 in 30 years? So they want to actually discount you. When people want to buy from you, they want to discount you and give you much less because they're looking for a certain yield. If they're going to come buy that 9%, they need a higher rate of return. So there's different ways to structure the paper, right, for future purchase if you ever need it. So this one here, we're going to say okay, but in a term of good, better, best, it's not the best way to structure it. So I'm just going to show you option two, which is important, and I won't, because of that we're limited on time, right, I'm just going to show you, we're going to figure them out real quick, and then I just want you to imagine if you're good at raising capital, you got people that will come in and buy your first mortgage, and it's equal to, and you're able to keep some of that second mortgage and have no money in the deal. So watch this. So we got the same 120, we get 12% down, right? Who can give me 70% of 108? I'm sorry, 70% of 120. Who can give me that number?
84,000.
What is it?
84.
84,000. So I'm actually gonna create a first mortgage at 70%, what?
LTV.
Even though we know the value is a little bit less, but that's where we're at. It's a 70% of the purchase price, right? So that's 84,000. Now I'm going to come and do a second at what?
24.
So it's 20%, which is what? Why is it not 30%? I heard someone say 30. Why is it not 30? So they have any skin in the game?
Yes.
No. They don't. So I want to go right here. This is 10% down. So my 70, 20, 10 is what you're creating. You heard of an 80, 20? Those were big popular loans back in the day. How well did those work out? You know, for the lender that had the 20%, you know, it's like, you got to be careful on that, right? But if you have no money in the deal and you created this, are you as risk out? Someone's capital was eventually somewhere, right? But here, what do we got? 20% LTV. What's my loan amount? 24,000. Right, so now you guys know, let's say you actually had to bring in a private investor. Let's just assume you had to bring in a private investor because this house needed some fixing and you got it fixed up. Let's just assume this was one we bought, fixed up, now we want to sell it. I got to pay off my underlying private investor, right? So I might want to sell this paper. So if I come in, are people more likely to buy 70% first at 70,000? Then they are a 90% 108? Why?
Equity position,
cushion, right? Are they going to ask for a lot of discount?
Yep.
Not normally, but will they still ask for a discount? Sometimes I structure these with a balloon. They like it where there's a balloon in there because they can then renegotiate terms if they want to. So they'll pay more for that if it has a balloon. So anyway, let's just real quick, because this is, it might be, we'll try to do a little more financial calculator, but I just want you to structure deals right here, right? So let's go back here. We know we can get away with at least 9%, so who can figure out? Let's go through it on the financial calculator. Type it in. So do the orange button, and clear your variables. See what you do when you do that? It clears the top. So we're starting fresh on a new scenario, right? So now what are we doing? Who's my leader?
We're fearless leader
that wants to share. We're acting, we're learning, we're acting, and we're sharing, right? You got it? So what's our loan? We're going to figure out first the first mortgage. What are the terms of my first mortgage? So what's the loan amount? What's PV?
$84,000.
So put that in there. Type in $84,000 and then hit PV. How many months? 360. You guys are bankers, right? We're cutting some deals. We're loaning some money out, right? You got it? What's the interest rate on that? What are you guys feeling like?
9%.
You want to stick with the 9? He's like, let's stick with the 9. Okay, so put 9 in there. What's the future value?
0.
Now what do you do? What's the missing one?
Payment.
So hit it. What'd y'all come up with?
675.
675 point what?
88.
88. So that's at 9%, right? 360 months. All right, so now we got to structure this one. Let's go do that. So you could, technically speaking, it's good to get in the habit of always clearing out the variables. But if you don't want to, just you can literally type in, go type in 24,000. Just type it in right now. I do this because it's faster, but sometimes you want to clear out the variables because you're doing a new loan. Sometimes you might. So 24,000 PV, 360, is it going to stay same on term? You can decide. Let's just say we do for right now. Now, do I want to charge the same for that one?
No.
Can you charge more?
Sure.
Who's the boss? Who's the lender? Who's the banker? You are. We're being the bank today, right? Creating multiple streams of passive income. So what's that number?
11.
So I got, what's the monthly paycheck?
28.56.
What's the monthly, what is it? I didn't hear it.
28.56.
228.56? Who else got 228.56?
Are we getting 11%?
Yeah, 11, sorry, 11. And then type in rate. 11, hit your I/R here. 228.56. And then hit payment. You can have other variables in there, but if you reset them, it'll give it. So what is it?
228.56.
At 11% for 30 years, right? So let's just say for a minute that you had to pay back your private money lender who loaned you money to acquire the house and fix it up. Right? Can you go with me? So let's, sometimes is that amount on a house like this, is that enough to get them paid off? If you sold that note for par? Like I say par, meaning without a discount. There are people that will buy that note at par. Some of them are going to want a 5% discount, some maybe a 10, but it's newly originated paper, they want to collect that payment stream, right? So what happens, let's say that paid off your underlying loan just for a minute, and that was the only loan. Can you wrap? I didn't want to get into that to totally take it to the next level. Could you wrap around an existing loan and do what I'm doing?
Yes.
You can. That's an advanced strategy, right? But here we're just creating it. We have a fix and flip, and I want to get what I'm going to get, but I want to stay in the deal, right? I want to stay in the deal, right? So now I use this, the proceeds. Who did I lose so far? Did I lose anybody? So we sold this house on bank, you know, the little signs you see? No bank financing required, you know, no bank qualifying, I think is what I've put in the past on mine, right? So we created two notes, so what's their payment? Right, 14, testing my math here, 14, who's got it? 11, 904. Right? Are we still in that range? If it's 1,200 in rents, are we still looking good?
Yeah.
Have I structured financing where I'm for a liquidity event? If I need a liquidity event to get liquid, am I there? Because I might not have to. I might, that underlying lender that I have might agree to stay in the deal and just collect this. Sometimes they don't want their money back. But what happens if I use this money to pay off my financing, right? I paid off the new financing they want to stay in long term, might take out my short term private money loan. You could do that. They might want to stay. But what's in the deal here? 24,000. I have no money in this deal, and I can decide to collect 228. So just for a minute, let's say passive income is our primary investment objective. We got active income from a job or business or something. How many of those? You heard me talk about stacking. You do a deal like that and you stack one on top of the other, on top of the other. How many of these would you need? How much money do you have in the deal?
Zero.
None. And you got to understand, well, Travis, who are these buyers that buy these first? How many insurance companies invest in notes? Big insurance companies. You know where they invest their assets? All their assets are typically in notes, real estate secured notes. They have other different contracts, but they buy mortgages. So this is a bread and butter transaction for them. There's other big hedge funds that are now buying these notes. So this one here, now, can I go liquidate this note if I need to?
Yeah.
Right? So I could sell, I have all sorts of options. I could sell off part of that structure to get a little cash, a little jingle in my pocket now. I could keep the back end, I could sell at a discount. Am I gonna take a bigger haircut on that note if I try to sell that one?
Yes.
Why? Even if it's performing and fresh, newly originated, and they're current, there's just more risk in a second. So you might get as low as a 50% discount on a performing second, right? But if you got 12,000 out of that, that's about what you would have made in a flip on something like that, right? So you did the same thing, and you could even just, but imagine that. So we actually will sell off a stream of those payments and stay in the deal on the back end and still be in the deal with future paydays. So it's kind of a cool deal if you structure them like that. If you don't need the capital, keep it. Go ahead.
The only thing is that in 2 years, if the borrower refi with a conventional loan, then
what happens if that happens?
Payday.
I get paid off. Right. So for the short term. So what happens? I have to go do with that capital I get. The passive income is my goal. I got to redeploy it. Right. I got to redeploy it. So that's the bargain when you have turnover to rental. You gotta, either fix up, do your cosmetic fix up, get someone back in there and get it to a passive income status again. Okay, another question.
Yeah, regarding structure, before I jumped ahead and I was structuring the second, I chose 180 payments instead of 360. I came up with a payment of 272. Regarding secondary market, would that be more advantageous at a 180 or a 360?
Yeah. That would be more. It's a shorter term.
Okay.
Right? So you'd get more for that note if it was paying off in a shorter amount of time. It has a balloon. Or, some investors, they like the balloon because in 5 years, I can go back to the table and force foreclosure and or renegotiate for a higher interest rate. They're in more control. So it depends on your buyer. They all typically are buying under a certain parameter.
Yeah, so just under this, it was only a $50 difference, which I kind of surprised.
For some people, they could pay off that second. So, is this new concept to anybody? Mm-hmm. Some people already knew that to do it. I know for me, I was like seller financing. One, I got to wait for my money when I was flipping houses. But two, now I'm learning how could I still make someone stay in the deal? Because I've shifted from, hey, I need some passive income. And if I don't start digging my well before I'm thirsty, what happens when I'm really thirsty for passive income and need it if I haven't been digging my well? I'm toast, right? I'm toast. So I encourage you guys. That's why I just wanted to take time because I didn't know where we would be able to fit that in and go through that. So in this particular model, find, fund, and flow, right? This is a model where you could be dealing with either existing performing paper. Like you might just be a guy sourcing this paper for an insurance company and getting paid brokerage fees if you wanted to. That's under the first model. But if you want to be the one that's actually enjoying those checks that come in, that's key. Quick question.
Could you explain a little about adjustable versus fixed?
Yeah, I personally don't do it. You could. I do all fixed. Right? You could build in some adjustable clauses in your, where it escalates up. I don't do that. That's personal preference. Who's the boss? You're the boss. It's your terms. You can do it. And there's pros and cons as to why you might do that. Right, so any questions on that model? We gotta jump through this here because I know we're going fast. So the key, that's the easy button. So here's model number three, find, fund. Wow, that was a cool, look at Tom with a little flip graphic. Look at you, buddy. All right, so why is this one important? So I'm not brokering, I'm actually funding out the transaction. So let's say I have some money, right? Let's say I have some money and I'm actually gonna buy some notes. And I'm getting, because I'm buying by the case, I might now sell by the bottle, right? So I can do that, and I'm going to flip these up. That's a very common strategy where people buy a bulk pool, aka hedge funds, right? Buy by the very large, they buy by the, the truckload, right? And they go smaller, so I can get in the 5 minutes, I just gotta hustle. Right, so each.
Well, we're just gonna sweet it up and get here early because the food's here early.
Okay, sounds good.
So we can catch it up later.
Sounds good.
So you don't have to.
So, why would you engage in this particular model? Right, is everyone has break evens. If you wanna be full-time and you run this as a business, right, you gotta sell some off like this to be, I need 5K, 7K, 10K, 12K a month, right? 11 miles to feed in San Diego, it costs some dough, right? So you have a higher monthly nut, right? So, but what you're typically knowing, you're not a broker, you're a trader, right? You're a note trader. And your business, it's an active business. If you're wanting to be more passive, you more than likely wouldn't be a part of this unless you joint ventured with someone who had a trading operation. Does that make sense? Like you might place money with them and a lot partner and split the upside when they actually trade paper. But just like you trade stocks, you can trade paper. You can buy and sell paper, right? So it's a volume game and you're smaller margins, right? So you're not gonna do that. So if you'd know right away if someone, you know, has a trade desk, right? They actually have paper for sale. You can buy notes from them, right? So here, you know, contact our trade desk, right? And so you know that they're either creating paper or they bought other existing paper that's already functioning and or, you know, I know people who buy non-performing paper, don't touch it. Like it's bad paper, they buy it at a steep discount because they buy big blocks, right? And then they sell them in smaller blocks. And they actually have offices in Newport Beach in very large, nice ivory towers. And they do very well with that in big blocks. Like it's like, you know, they buy a $10 million chunk, right? And they'll sell it for 16 to 18 million, you know, just without, because they sell it based on some of this, a few pennies markup of what's owed. Because they're buying it 10 cents on the dollar, right? And they'll sell it 15 cents in smaller pieces. That's what they do.
How actively do operations like this solicit the resale, or do they just wait for people to come to them?
They're typically out. If you go to different trade shows, like any show, they've got, you know, they're wanting to meet you. You're an active note buyer, right? And depending on what they have in their inventory, right, you can buy just those different types of notes that we said, performing, reperforming, subperforming. What's your niche that you want to focus on? You can buy whatever you want. It's for sale. Just like there's a marketplace for houses, there's a marketplace for the paper, right? And when the marketplace ebbs and flows, you can decide that I want to buy houses. Coach Mark teaches us how to buy houses using seller financing. Can I buy on seller financing? Can I turn around and sell on seller financing?
Oh, yeah.
Some really cool stuff, right? So that's a volume game. So let's go real quick to model number four. We spend a lot of our time in model number four. Right, so we like to buy paper that would be considered bad, be considered, you know, it's got some scratch and dent, right, for whatever reason, because we know how to go in and fix some of that, restructure debt with the homeowner, right? A lot of times it was temporary, sometimes you just find out it was a temporary hardship, they're back on their feet. In a second position, some people, they just don't, you know, they don't understand that you actually have all the powers of the first mortgage, and you can foreclose and take their house. We've had people literally say to us as we're foreclosing from second position, people say, why would you do that? We spoke a little bit about that when we were here a month ago, and they just don't understand why you would do that. Well, would you, if you just, let's think about that for a minute. If you found a house, let's say you found a note, right, that from second position you could pick it up for 15 cents on the dollar of what's owed, and they're current on their first mortgage. If they're current on their first mortgage, what does that mean?
They want to stay
in the house, right? It's called emotional equity. And one of the biggest mistakes I made, you can write this down, it's a writer downer. Never underestimate the power of emotional equity. Even though your LTV numbers might be out of whack, like they might be at 150% loan to value, right? Kids are in school, they've lived there for 10 years, mama ain't moving. Pops, figure out how to keep the family here. It's very, very powerful, and I totally underestimated it when I got going with seconds, right? But this is a situation, whether it's first mortgages or second mortgages or REOs, right? An REO where the house has been foreclosed. You can buy actual houses, and it's a situation with the notes. You're finding them, you're funding them, you gotta go fix them, And float would be, I'm going to keep them in my portfolio as a cash flowing asset, right? I'm not going to sell them. I'm going to build up, stack, you know, another golden goose that lays more golden eggs, right? You know, and so when you sell them, what are you doing to the golden goose? You're getting rid of them. You're getting rid of that producer, right? Right, so this is something. So let me just go through this really quick. So non-performing first. Why is non-performing this category? Because they got a problem. They're currently not paying. They need some sort of a modification. They got it. Something happened. You got to find out what happened. You know, I think it was Coach that maybe said this. What would you like to see happen next? Was that what you said when one of your questions? You know, when you're talking to someone, well, what would you like to see happen next? You know, gets them to talk. That,
oh yeah.
Was that one of your questions? I think.
Not necessarily a question, but it's just like so. What do we see next? What's the next step?
Yeah, like okay. I mean, you gotta get them talking. Well, tell me what happened, because you're calling. In this case, you're calling as their lender. Hey, we acquired your note. You contractually owe X. They've gotten a letter. They're calling them. They're like, oh, I thought this got charged off and went away. Does charge getting a loan getting charged off mean the contract went away? No, the bank for accounting purposes said, oh, we're gonna write this off. They sold it out in the secondary market. Is they still owe the money? Yeah, it's whether someone pursues them or not, right? So non-performing seconds. That's what you'll actually do on something like that, right? So if you think of time, we got foods here. So REOs, right? That's something you can do. And a big deal here, if you're a passive investor, right? You would not be engaging in this in an active manner. You would actually be joint venturing or loaning money to someone who this is their business model, and you would ask for a security agreement, which is, you know, it's a UCC filing. If they don't own the house, right, and you're gonna loan them money and they buy 10 notes, you would get a security agreement across all 10 notes if you want to loan them money to go be, if you're passive and you want to go loan to an active investor that's doing this model, right? So you can be passive and loan to someone that's doing this model. Does that make sense? But if this one where you're saying, hey, I want to roll up my sleeves and learn how to do workouts, right? You know, Kristen Boland in our office, I think is awesome. If there's anyone to teach you how to do that, we'll talk about how we make her available. I approve all the workouts that she does, but she's amazing if that's something you guys are interested in. Lots of money here. If you buy a small portfolio and you only have, you can't work six notes that are non-performing, you can't work those full time. You mail out your collection letters, you'll wait. It's just not a full-time business. So you could be in this business part-time if you wanted to. Full-time is where, you know, okay, I'm gonna go buy 100 notes, raise some capital, work these notes out, right? Which is something we're doing. Any questions on that model? We'll just blitz through this last one really quick. Actually, there's two more quick ones. Oh, that's the same one. Oh, okay, so you'll actually, so this is interesting. So we went through this right here. Right, so you'd actually find a note, fund it out, right? And you'll actually turn around and sell the house. So you'll flip it while still flowing it. Does that make sense? So you flipped it, sold it with seller financing, but you're gonna stay in it. So that's this model that I showed you right here. So seller financing. And then the last one, just before we break for lunch, let me just show you this. So this is, we talk about as you fix the loans, right? As you structure, you wanna structure your terms when you restructure the debt so that you could sell them. Why would you sell the golden goose? Right, only if you need some active income. Hopefully you could figure out how to get that some other way. Right, because you want to keep that. So it provides for some flexibility, and there is some tax planning there. You know, when you actually, you know, modify the terms of an original loan, it does create some phantom income. So you do have to be careful when you're doing that. If you're actually buying these notes out of a tax shelter, like your IRA or your Roth IRA, you don't even care about, you could structure the terms however you want, because who's the taxable entity? Are they paying taxes? No, nope, not today. So any questions on those guys? I think that's it, yeah. So questions on that before we break for lunch? Are you guys kind of seeing where you might spend some time, or you kind of maybe resonated with one of the models a little more than one of the other ones? Right, so you know, we love buying at non-performing notes. I bought my first set of reperformers, and I studied the paper trail. And they must have, as a big hedge fund, had gotten them reperforming again, and they must have bought them at the 20 cents on the dollar range. So So did they do well if they bought at 20 cents on the dollar and sold to me at 62 cents? They did well. So why do you think Travis and Aaron and company are spending some time in the non-performing note game? Well, there's some available, right? But at the same time, I don't know how long they're going to be available. So what's the worst number in business?
Zero. One.
Why one? Well, zero is actually worse. But the worst number in business in terms of marketing lead sources, if you only have one source of capital, one source of notes coming in, what happens if that source dries up? You're out of business. So that's why I say, really understand what Coach Mark and John are teaching you guys on acquiring the property. And now this, hopefully this understanding of creating financing on the back end will help you just sell your assets for more and create some passive entities. If you're good at managing and rental property, those are legacy assets. You get someone else to pay down your mortgage and you own those things free and clear. Your kids and your kids' kids and your kids' kids, that's a cool deal. But if you teach them the mortgage business, they will have to once in a while redeploy capital as it pays off, right?